Hi everyone.
Hello.
My name is Adam Raymer. I use he who runs, and I live in New York, not Berlin. I'm really grateful to be here with all of you this morning. I want to extend thanks and gratitude to both the leadership team here, but also everyone that has made this day so welcoming and so powerful so far. This morning, this will be my sermon debut. I don't know if that is what you would refer that as, but we're going to go with sermon debut. One of the key themes from the book of Mark, what we've just heard, is this idea of journey, both physically and spiritually. And so in Mennonite Action did our own journey, a 140-mile march from Harrisonburg, Virginia to Washington, D.C., to join in an interfaith and interracial coalition to oppose Christian Zionism and Christian nationalism. We released this Bible study guide to accompany us on this pilgrimage based on the Book of Mark, aptly called Along the Way with Jesus. In Mark 10, 17 to 25, we hear that Jesus is preparing for a journey. He is held up by someone with an urgent question. The person asks or admits to have obeyed all the holy laws since they were old enough to know how to. But they think that there must be something more. And indeed, there is. In order to join this journey with Jesus, the person will need to take a risk, to do something that costs them, to do something that feels impossible. And a little bit later, in 28 to 44, Jesus is walking ahead of the disciples. He's offered them an unsettling truth, that the first will be last, and the last will be first. And this makes them afraid. And why does this make them afraid? Perhaps this was the first time that they realized that their own expectations for how the world might be made right would be thwarted. Their decision to follow Jesus and to walk behind him would overturn their hopes. So, what does that mean? What does it mean to be on a journey? How do we push ourselves when we're on our own journey? More so right now, how do we hold on to our own hope and our own grief while we're on our own journeys? How do we continue in the face of the impossible? How do we deconstruct and reconstruct our beliefs? How do we continue? And so these ideas of journeys, physically and spiritually, have been swirling with me for a while now. And I thought this morning would be a really great place to try to unswirl those and try to trace them here with you. Was born and raised in Madison, Wisconsin, attending Madison Mennonite Church. Our urban congregation shared space with a local UCC church, and growing up, our congregation represented what most of my understanding was of community. All my friends were from church, all my parents' friends were from church. It felt like most evenings I was hanging out with people from church. That was internally, but also externally, that extended into the broader city. Some of my core memories from church over the years had far less to do with scripture and more about these ideas of community commitments. I remember making anti-invasion signs to protest the war in Iraq and Afghanistan for the U.S. In 2009, many people in our congregation joined in with thousands of others to bring food and sleep in our state capital when the then governor vowed to destroy public unions. We would help formerly incarcerated families, and we'd help house unhoused neighbors within our church walls. And all of these things instilled a strong sense of values that I carry to this day, of mutuality, of community care, and of service. But like many others growing up, I suffered with some mental health issues. As I got into my teenage years, I suffered really badly with depression specifically. I became very isolated. I dealt with self-harm and suicidal ideation, and then I got really into drugs, all as a way to hide away and mask. And I stopped going to church. I stopped seeing my friends from church. My parents gave in. They just stopped trying to fight it. I slipped deeper into drug usage, into more mental health crises. I got into dealing drugs, and I was mostly just flailing around aimlessly. When I was 17, I was arrested and I nearly died after a drug-related incident. I was driving heavily under the influence and my car was hit by a freight train. After leaving the hospital after a week or so, I was put in front of a judge and I was told that I could cut my whole record a sponge if I had gotten clean. And so at the age of 17, I went through the dance of drug recovery. Outpatient rehab was two or three times a week on the other side of town. I had no more license, this was taken away, and the bus system was not that great. And so my parents could and would take off work to drive me across town for each session that would last about 2 hours. They could afford it with their jobs and with their insurance. And so for 8 months or so, we continued on stairs. And as we did, I simultaneously watched friends of mine who were not given the same opportunities. Our paths slowly diverted to very different ends. I watched very close friends of mine overdose. I watched friends of mine pass. Friends go to jail. Friends end up in the streets. And I began to see these disparages in society, how we treat usage and how racial and economic backgrounds undergird these injustices. I was given a second chance while others were not. And this really, really messed me up. I was consumed with survival for months. I had no real understanding why I was seemingly able to heal and get better and be given these opportunities when others around me, who I thought maybe were better people, who had less extreme circumstances, were not. And I couldn't quite understand it, but over time, as I slowly began to heal, I started reading and learning from people that had very different versions of beliefs in public health and policing and criminal justice. And I threw myself into this idea of trying to help and work within my own community. This guilt turned into determination. And so by the time I got into college, first in Western Montana and then in Wisconsin, I got into harm reduction organizing and local politics and community organizing. I volunteered for anything and everything I could find. I would see someone would be on the corner and be like, hey, do you want to sign up and do this? I'm like, sure, let's do it. And so my days were just filled up going through different activities, really throwing myself in, trying to make some bit of a difference. It was during this time period that I was fortunate enough to start working in local politics specifically. And over time, I was able to turn that into an actual livelihood and a career. And so I've spent the last 7 years or so working as a community organizer and mostly as a political staff, meaning that I've helped elect people to US Congress, US Senate, and dozens of local offices. Primarily, my jobs have been described as a relationship holder. I've met with different groups, other elected officials, unions, faith groups, community groups, individuals, and everyone in between, work together on different policy outcomes and electoral strategies. And that's what I was doing in the fall of 2023. I was working for a member of Congress as their political director. On Saturday, October 7th, I remember waking up and seeing my phone. I watched in horror as the images of Hamas's attacks unfolded, and I was horrified by the idea of what was going to come next. I watched in real time in horror as elected officials moved immediately from grief and into retaliation. I watched and saw images and videos of white phosphorus and indiscriminate 2,000-pound bombs being dropped on Gaza, paid for by our tax dollars. In the days following October 7th, different organizations, different faith groups, different people kept calling me, urging my boss to join what was then a very nascent and early call, Ceasefire Now, led by a few brave members of Congress. And through my conversations with my boss, it was clear that they were not prepared to call for a ceasefire. This also really made me feel isolated. I felt overwhelmed by the mass carnage that I saw. I was overwhelmed by seeing elected officials really buy into this idea of, oh, we need a just war and retaliation. only if we can go after Hamas and do this. The images we're seeing of these bombs being dropped, this white phosphorus being dropped, went completely against that. I felt complicit. I was working for our government while our government was underwriting and supporting this retaliation. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't make a difference on the inside, and so I decided to quit. I wanted to try to make a difference from the outside. And so as I was writing my resignation letter, the idea of faith kept coming back to me. And this really confused me a lot. Outside of weddings or funerals, I hadn't spent much time in a Mennonite space in about a decade or so. Being a Mennonite felt much more tied into an obscure part of my upbringing rather than a continued practice. I felt that I couldn't tie my organizing work and my political work into a church setting. But something in me kept coming back to this idea of being Mennonite and of faith. And I couldn't separate the two. I couldn't separate my decision and why I wanted to quit and why I needed to quit from my upbringing and from my Mennonite faith. And so in my resignation letter, I wrote that my Mennonite faith compelled me to do everything that I could to not be complicit in bloodshed and to do all that I could to stop it. Shortly thereafter, I found myself in the streets in New York City with my neighbors, with my friends, and my loved ones. Alongside my partner Eden, who is Jewish and Israeli-American, we attended morning services and protests led by organizations such as If Not Now and Jewish Voice for Peace. And I felt deeply inspired by the organizations and by my partner who are centering their own faith and cultural traditions and practices to speak up against this massive retaliation by the Israeli government against and towards Palestinians in Gaza. I saw Jewish and Muslim groups speaking out for a ceasefire. I saw them marching. I saw them praying, demonstrating. I saw them being arrested. I saw friends of mine being beaten by the police. But I didn't see Christian groups showing up in these spaces, identifying themselves as Christian groups. I saw a lot of right-wing Christians speaking out and saying that this was a biblical issue, but that this was a Jewish versus Muslim issue. And I felt ashamed. I thought to myself, what can I do? I longed in that moment to be back in my community. I thought to myself, who are the people around me that I can bring with me to be in these spaces? To show solidarity, people in Gaza and Palestinians, but to also disrupt these narratives, hate, to push back against rising Islamophobia and anti-Semitism in our communities. And so one afternoon in October in Washington, D.C., I was helping organize sit-ins with If Not Now, a Jewish organization, in senators' offices on Capitol Hill. Afterwards, we joined many others, hundreds of others, for a Jewish mourning ceremony where we're placing stones with prayers to honor Palestinians who had been killed in the last couple of weeks. There, I ran into and saw Nick Martin. Nick and I had worked on a presidential campaign before, and the only thing I really knew about him was that he was another Mennonite working in politics, and he really liked the Phillies. We quickly checked in and we realized that we were having the same thought. How can we show up as Mennonites in this moment? What is the role that Mennonites and Christians can have in this moment? What should we do? And so we started to talk to people around us, other Mennonites that we knew, pastors, community organizers, theologians, teachers, healthcare workers, random friends of friends. Oh, I think this person's cousin would be interesting to talk to. And try to figure out what we should do. We talked to people in Menochem, CPT, MCC, and many others. And we came to the conclusion that we wanted to do something more. We wanted to take public direct action as Mennonites, explicitly as Mennonites, and join others in the streets and in congressional offices, joining in their efforts to call for a ceasefire. On November 28th, we had our first call. We had over 850 people join us from across the US and Canada. And we called each other to join in on our own journey together as Mennonites. And so together we have been calling for a permanent ceasefire and an arms embargo against Israel, a release of all hostages and political prisoners, and an end to the occupation of Palestine. And since then we've been lobbying our elected officials, holding worship protest services, doing trainings around the country, and taking civil disobedience, being arrested publicly as Mennonites, as a way to embody our Anabaptist beliefs and convictions through peace and justice and against hate and violence, through active participation in our government. And we're 10 months now into Mennonite action, and this journey continues. It saddens me, and I hold much grief for the conditions in which why this has to exist. But I found a lot of direct hope in this work, and I felt a lot of deep connection to others. And more so than any other time in my life, I felt the most connected that I've been to being a Mennonite. I've been inspired by the thousands of others who have joined Mennonite action since then too. From elder Mennonites to queer and trans Mennonites, to Mennonites of color, to young Mennonites who left the church and found their way back through Mennonite action, to people who are attending a Mennonite church for the very first time because of the work of Mennonite action. And together we've been grappling and building a living definition of what it means to be Mennonite today while we work for the liberation of Palestine. And isn't that what Jesus would want from us? To grapple with these definitions, to figure out who we are and where we are going? The work itself may feel as impossible as a fully loaded camel trying to get through a needle's eye gate. But isn't that precisely why we must do it? A few weeks ago, Amy spoke in a sermon about nudging the needle of justice and said that the story is not fully written yet. And so the question for us then would be, where to? When we look towards the beyond, the horizon line, what do we see? Are we waiting for travelers coming back from their own journeys to speak to us, to teach us? Or are we now to turn towards each other and forge onwards together towards a true kingdom of peace and justice that we can build? And so I just want to close with a quote from the late great teacher, organizer, and Mennonite ancestor, Vincent Parkin. I'm a citizen of a country that does not yet exist. And beyond that, on our own journeys together, how and can we build a world that we wish to live in, one of mutuality, and life-giving dignity and liberation for Palestinians, for Israelis, and all of God's children. Thank you.